May the presence of God continue to grace this assembly, and may the Spirit of God continue to speak to us. I have to tell you this morning that as we sang that song out of this little folder here, My Child, it just touched me so much. Why did it touch me? Well, for a couple reasons. I've been noticing all week, this week, I've been noticing families with different ages of children, and I notice that there's a lot of younger ones here. And I know that mamas and daddies taking care of the little ones in church and teaching them to sit still one night after another in meetings, it's not just the easiest thing to do. And I notice that there's a lot of patience. And then when it's time to take them all home, and you know, that's one reason it touches me, because been there, done that. Why else does it touch me? A song like this. My mind goes back to a young couple who was part of our congregation and married several years and no children. And announcements would be made like were just made this morning about new arrivals. And the poor lady would go out to the car and just cry and cry. And that touches me as a pastor when I think about that stuff. Because there's people that would love to hold a little one, and they can't. At least not one of their own. And so, and then there's parents who maybe because of mistakes made in life, and maybe because of bad choices, and maybe because of lack of training or whatever, or help, their children didn't make choices the way they would have liked them to have made. And so they sing a song like this, and then they have another set of emotions. But the thing that gripped me about this song, all those are realities that come to my mind. And then you think about the intensity and some of the moments in child training and some of the tough times when you just, where it felt like you didn't know what else to do or where else to go or what, and you just cried out to God for help, and how he helped in a moment when you were at exasperated, not knowing what to do next with a child that was giving you a tough time. And that happens at young ages, and sometimes it happens at older ages. And when I think about that, this song, and often, and back around, it was about 90, I better not even say what year it was, but I remember when I heard this song the first time. And often in my prayers, this song phrase comes to my mind, Lord, help me to teach my child to live so that he may know how to die. And then the song comes to me in my mind, Daddy, will you be there for me? And thinking about that, of course, another reason why this type of a song touches me is because we've seen a few things in relating to babies of incarcerated mothers and their mothers. Things that just are heartrending when you think about them. And a little bit of experience with foster care in its own way, and what that has led us to in adoption, and the things that whole picture brings to my mind, it just touches me as I sing a song like this. You've loaned me your treasure, Jesus, and while I may call him mine, help me to guide him gently back to a love that is thine. So if I shed a couple tears this morning, I hope it's okay, because that song just grips me, and especially as I prayed about this thing for through the week, the title we want to speak on this morning is Little Things We Can Do for Our Children. Little Things We Can Do for Our Children. And this has its application for not only parents, but also grandparents. It has its application for uncles and aunts, older siblings. It has its application for school teachers. Because if we're part of the family of God, children are part of our church family, right? They're part of our associates. We relate to them at one level or another. Children are part of our world, and someone has said that a society that does not welcome children is a doomed society. And do we observe that around us? Did we talk about that? I think Wednesday night, worthless people yet worth more than the whole world. Remember what I said about that fetus that was no bigger than a thumb. Remember that? What I said about what happened with that one. In a world where that kind of stuff goes on, God bless us with children. May God give us a vision for our children. Our children are our most valuable resource. Think of the most high dollar thing that you can name. The biggest investment, the biggest things and accomplishments of man, the biggest bank accounts, the most prosperous farms and all that that contains, and all the equipment, and all the business efforts, and all the wealth and pomp, and take all that value and accumulate it, and then just take one of these little ones and stand it up here, and that little one is worth more than it all. Let's never forget it, and let's put time and energy, whether we're school teachers or older siblings, they're all worth a lot. They're all worth so much, and they deserve the best that we can give them. But you know, the biggest problem is we're still human and we still make mistakes. Isn't that right? We still make mistakes. And yet children are so forgiving. So if we go into a few of these points, I trust that the Spirit of God can continue to do His work among us. Little things we can do for our children. Someone has said something to the effect, and I don't have the words, maybe you heard another variant on this. We hear about variants these days. You might have heard another variant on this quote. It's something to the effect that we think we're doing a bunch of little things in life, but some years from now, you'll look back and realize that those little things were the big things. And when we think about raising and training children, whether that's our school students or however, we all have a part in that. And uncles and aunts, older siblings have a part in that. Somehow, somewhere, relating to the younger ones. And then we think about, if you're a hunter, there's magazines that are produced about hunting, and they teach you all kinds of safety measures, equipment, this and that. And if you follow it for a period of time, it kind of goes back and goes around to some of the very same points all over again. Those of you who are farmers know that it does exactly the same thing. Hordes Dairymen, some of them farming magazines, they talk again about safety with those herbicides, and they talk about being careful with the equipment and keeping PTO shields and guards in place and so on. The farming thing that has its whole thing and seasonal articles about things that are appropriate to the time and the season and wintertime carefulness and whatever all have you, and the mechanics are the same. And of course, housekeeping and cooking and baking and all of those type of things. There's magazines that are produced and things like that and cookbooks, and some of them we go around to again and again and again and again, and we take it for granted. But shouldn't we have a strong desire to know how to guide these most precious little ones among us in the ways of Jesus? It is true. As Brother Chad said in that reading out of the book of, I think it was the book of Luke, he said there, where he read those verses about Jesus blessing those infants. What a blessing. Just think about that. And yet, maybe the blessing that they will receive is a mom and a daddy, someone that cares about them, praying for them and asking God to bless them, touching them, and just helping them to feel that they're loved and appreciated. Just think about it. the little ones that are among us today. Think about your community where you are now and add 25 years. That's a little longer than the timeline we had on the board last night. Just add 25 years to your life where you are. And who will be doing what you're doing today? Just add 25 years to your life, whatever it is. Who will be doing in church life, in the community, in the shops and farms around the area here, in the kitchens and in the schoolrooms? Who will be doing it 25 years from now? And a lot of that is contingent upon how it's going at home today. I'm sure that you have heard this before, and some of these things I'm sure you've heard before, but I guess we'll just mention them. In a child's mind, what is love? L-O-V-E. What is love? In a child's mind, L-O-V-E is T-I-M-E. Time. Time. And sometimes that's our most scarce commodity, but to the children it means the most. Love equals time in a child's mind. And if whether they want to admit it or not, sometimes an adolescent, time equals love also. Sometimes for an older teenager, time equals love. And sometimes we think it's our scarcest commodity, but I'm going to tell us something this morning. If we don't have time for them, the day will come when they don't have time for us. Little things we can do for our children. Number one, we can train them. We could talk all morning about this one point. The Bible says very plainly, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And that includes a lot. It also says in another scripture, bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, watching what's happening in their lives, watching their personality, watching their habits, trying to guide them, teaching them, little by little, line upon line, and precept upon precept. How many times do children need to be reminded, pick up your toys, put your dress back in the closet, put those shoes, take them out of the living room, take them to your bedroom, just once and again, once and again, once and again. Put the wrenches back on the bench after you're done using them. Put them in the toolbox if you please. But don't let them lie around on the floor. Clean up the oil spill after you change the oil in the lawnmower. On and on and on and on. And you just have to say it again and again. Just train them and teach them. And eventually they'll be the ones telling somebody. Eventually they'll be the ones telling the very same things that you've told to them. And helping them with their cooking and with their baking. And with their little projects if you can. Remember, L-O-V-E in the child's mind is T-I-M-E. Love equals time. We live in a world that is ever so concerned about training dogs. There's a sign along I-78 that just bugs me about every time I see it. It says perfectly trained in 2 weeks and has a dog there with a newspaper in its mouth. Perfectly trained in 2 weeks. And I'm just going to tell you something. Child training takes a lot more than just 2 weeks. It's a continuous thing. Day by day, day by day, day by day, line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. And it's not just a 2-week process. Unless God would, for some reason, pull that child out of your home at 2 weeks of age. And that happens sometimes. We're worried about training of horses. No one would want to be on the roads of Lancaster County if those horses were untrained. I'm sorry, it wouldn't be very safe at all. Even with that, it's dangerous enough. Last night, getting up to Millport Road, going up 222, there was a horse that was at a turning lane, and he, for some reason, or was not interested in making a left-hand turn, And the boy that was in the buggy jumped out and grabbed that horse by the bridle and ran it around till it was able to go again. For some reason, the red light was spooking him, but the horse was trained. The horse wasn't running over top of him. It looked like he had everything under control. But I'm going to tell you something. It's one thing to train a horse, and it's better not to ride one that's not trained, especially if you're not a horse trainer. But our children need training. Because if a horse is out of control, that's one thing. But a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. And it happens all the time. It happens all the time. And people were even worried about training dolphins. And yet it seems like in our world, children get to do about anything they want to when they want to do it. Everything except safety issues like seat belts and car seats and vehicles and probably going to school. Those are about the only things that children have to do in 2021. But in the Christian perspective, it's a whole lot broader scope than that, isn't it? It's a lot more than just that. So we need to train them, and training takes time. It just takes time. Number two, provide for them. Provide for them. The Bible says, but if any provide not for his own, especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Provide for them. I have seven little sub-points here. We need to provide instruction for them. Instruction. Provide them with instruction. Proverbs chapter 4. We're in the book of Proverbs in our Sunday school lessons, and I don't want to be too redundant if some of these come up in our book here shortly. Hear ye, children, the instruction of a father, and attend to no understanding, for I give you good doctrine, forsake ye not my law. For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also and said unto me, let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom, get understanding, forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth. And if you go to other places in the book of Proverbs, you see that concept of the instruction of a father and the law of the mother. It says that it's like a chain around the neck. And many, many young people in their inquisitiveness and their carnality sometimes have wandered away, and somehow there was a jerk on the neck. Symbolically and maybe proverbially, but there's something about it that the law of mom says you don't do this, and the instruction of dad says you shouldn't do it either. And it should call any person into check at some point in their life. By the time a child is 12 years old, they should be very able to write out what is the law of mom in the house. What would mom say about this situation? What would mom say about these friends? What would mom say about this or that? What would dad say? And blessed is that child who cares about what they say, cares about what mom and dad think, and come back and say, dad, what do you think? What do you say? And when they start doing that, it's a blessing. But they don't always. Sometimes they make their own decisions. And sometimes all you can do is say, God be with them, keep them safe, and watch over them. Because after a while, they make their own choices, and they go. And they will make mistakes now and then. They will. The instruction. We also need to provide for them in the way of education. And this is education about all themes of life. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thy heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up, and shalt bind them for a sign upon thy hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and on thy gates. There's all kinds of ways that this is done. Some of this teaching, it's done as we work in the garden together. It's done as we take a walk in the woods together or around a lake or across a dam like we do at our house sometimes. You can teach a lot of things. And when you sit down and have family worship, and when you put that child to bed at night, and when you step by the bedroom of the teenage boys and just ask how your day went today. Maybe you just got back from a school board meeting and just check in just to see how it's going. And they say, well, I had this happen today. And then just give a little instruction, just give a little word. And as they share what's on their minds and then go to bed, and before you go to bed, pray about it. It's just education. And of course that has to do with schooling too. And then the mottos we have on our walls in the house. And some of them have gospel signs out in front. All of those type of things. Say something. Say something. It's a quiet message, but it says something. Visitors already have made comments. I remember such and such a plaque I saw in somebody's house that said, and maybe it had been nothing more than a Bible verse. How about our homes? Education. It's a quiet message and it says something. All right. Example. Thinking about this, my mind goes to Titus chapter 2, again, very well-known passage, and we could read the first 8 verses here. Talks about the aged women teaching the younger women. And for some aged women, it's not mom anymore. For the last 21 years, my wife's mother has not been with us, but she has depended sometimes on other older ladies to help her with some challenges in life. Says the aged men teaching the younger men, and how wise it is for young fathers, young school teachers, to go to somebody older that's been there, done that, and say, what advice do you have for me in this situation? We should do that. And if it's not dad, because maybe dad's not with us anymore, we can still ask an older man for advice. That they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. Young men, likewise, exhort to be sober-minded. But the verses that I'm looking for here in this example, this point of example for providing example in all things, showing thyself a pattern of good works, in doctrine, showing uncorruptness, gravity, sincerity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that he that is of this contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. My dear friends, this morning, we as parents, we as older siblings, we need to be very careful in the example that we're leaving. Somebody follows you, watching the things you do. Walk in the light and be pure in his sight. Somebody follows you. And did you ever notice that a big brother starts using some words that are a little bit off color? The young ones pick up on it really quick. Why is that? Sound speech that cannot be condemned. That he that is of the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil thing to say of you. I remember I heard during the Sunday school class about a person at the hay auction that uses some bad language. And I remember the first time it ever dawned on me that there's such a thing as real bad language, and somebody, just because they're in the presence of somebody that doesn't do it that way and has a little bit of a testimony. I remember being as like about a 14-year-old boy and watching a fellow came in. He was an old backhoe operator, a hillbilly from the Tennessee, if there ever was one. And he started using some language and suddenly smacked his own mouth. I thought, man, what's going on here? And I didn't know all the lingo. I didn't know all what he was trying to say. And a little bit later, he did exactly the same thing. He said a couple of words and he smacked his own mouth. I thought, wow, what's happening here? And I was a little too young to figure it out. But he was with somebody that didn't use those words. And he knew it for some reason. Example. So if somebody talks the way you talk, is that okay? The descriptive adjectives we use sometimes. Barnyard talk or whatever. Is it okay? Number 4. Provide for them work. Provide work. It's a little thing we can do for our children, but provide work for them. Why do they work? That they may have to supply their own needs, which is something that grows with the child, learning to provide for themselves, and also that they may have to give. And teach them children when that offering plate goes by, it's just perfectly fine for them to put some of the pennies in the from their piggy bank into that plate. And tell them what that means. It's a little thing, but it eventually becomes a big thing because we want them to grow up and do that, don't we? Provide work so that they can have to provide for themselves eventually and have to give. Teach them that if a man doesn't work, neither should he eat. I remember that lesson pretty vividly when I was about 8 years old. I just, for some reason, felt that the chickens in the chicken pen didn't need to have feed anymore and didn't need to have water either. And so somebody figured that if I didn't work with those chickens and do that little job, they had to have a little way to teach me. So one day I remember there was a large stack of wood on the barn floor that needed to be stacked. And so Dad says, "Son, we're going to go into the house and eat lunch. But until you remember to feed those chickens and give them water," it was just a couple dozen hens or something, he said, "you're going to stack this wood and we're going in to eat." And I think the next generation might be able to tell you that that kind of a thing works sometimes. If you don't work, you don't eat either. Age-appropriate work. Skill-level appropriate work. Not all boys are going to run a skid loader as young as others are. Not all the girls are going to be able to take over the kitchen, but age-appropriate and skill-appropriate. Give them a challenge now and then, but also, if it's above their head, let it wait a year or two. They don't all develop at the same speed and the same way. But give them work to do. I mean, if we're out working in the garden, let them take one of those tools and work it in the ground and let them do something and compliment them and say, "No, don't do it this way, do it that way," and help them to learn. If you're pounding some nails or doing a little doghouse or something, let them take that hammer. Oh, that makes a little, you can talk about the socks rotating. Just get a little boy or a little girl in there and help them let them help Dad and Mom. I mean, that just makes their day. It just does. If you're in a safe tractor, let them take that steering wheel and see what happens if it goes this way or that, or on the lawn or whatever. Be safe, but let them do it. Let them feel it a little bit. It just puts something in them. And they come in and they tell, "Mom, do you know what I did?" And they tell the story. It's so great. And do you know what it does? It helps to, it's T-I-M-E, it's L-O-V-E. It kind of works together. And they go to bed at night and they can be so happy. Not always, but provide for them. Provide a secure atmosphere for them. Children are bad sometimes. I guess we all know that. But if there's ever a correction given, forgive them. Let them know it's taken care of. Hold them until they calm down after spanking, if they're old enough to hold or young enough to hold. Tell them to go wash your face, go back out to the table, and maybe we can be a little better now. Forgive them. You don't need to keep bringing up, "Remember what you did yesterday? Remember what you did last week?" No. If it's forgiven, let it be forgiven. However, I've already mentioned it, restraint and correction. It's a little thing. Ends up being a big thing, right? The example of Eli, he didn't restrain his sons. And when they were older, he didn't restrain them either. But restraint and correction are so necessary. It means if they cannot learn by word, they must feel sometimes. It does mean that. The Bible says that. There's enough Proverbs to substantiate that. Nurture and admonition isn't only talking. Sometimes they need to feel. And most of our children know what that's about. I know in our world it's not promoted and certainly not encouraged, but it does work. It's God's way, if it's done right. And one of the things wherever they need restraint is in family worship. You know, I can tell sometimes, and I say this very kindly, but do you want to help your children behave better in church? Try it in family worship. 15 or 20 minutes every day that the little one that's having struggle, if it sits on Dad's lap and in family worship, and we be quiet and have a little bit the same type of atmosphere we want to have in church Sunday morning, it just helps a lot with Sunday morning and church service behavior. Just a little sidebar there. Little things we can do for our children, profitable, recreation, things we can provide for them. They need a few toys. Absolutely they do. Let them use them. Get down on the floor and play with them. Go out to, and teach them how to catch a ball, a big ball, or a softball, or a tennis ball. Maybe if they're too young, a ball that if it would to hit them at the wrong place, it wouldn't hurt them so badly. But teach them. Play with them. Take them on walks. Let them get out. Ride a bicycle with them. Oh, it means so much to them. Provide for them. Now the third point, that was point two with seven little sub-points, but we're going now to point three. Maybe we won't spend quite as much time with these, but my dear friends, number three, accept and respect them. Do you know they're people too? Do you know they have feelings too? Do you know that the Bible still says honor all men? And I guess that means children too. Do you know that it says children are an heritage of the Lord? And the fruit of the womb is his reward. And whoso shall receive such little child in my name receiveth me. Jesus said that. That's why there is a feeling of anticipation around a pregnancy. When a little child is coming to our house. God is sending another one to live at our house. And did you hear what those words said? Whoso shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me. Think about it. We don't often think of it that way. That's just like Jesus in a little tiny person coming to our house. And how would we take care of him? How would we treat him? Accept and respect them. This week I was talking to a man. I never ever expected this out of him. But he came walking over and he started to talk. And he asked me this and that, and I could tell, and his eyes started to get wet. And he said, I just wondered, and long story short, he has a special child at his house. He said, no one would know it by looking at this little one. No one knows that this is a special child, but he's having some issues, and we're dealing with this, and we're dealing with that. And he went down and started describing some of the stuff that's going on. And you know what? Every one of our children, every one of them, is special in their own way. Every one of our children is special in their own way. My wife was from a family of 13, and she one day told me, Virgil, I don't know what we would have done without any one of the 13. Every one of them had the place to fill. Every one of them was important. Every one of them has the place that they filled in the family farm and in the business and whatever all else. Every one of them was special. Every one of them. And some of them are more special than others because of physical or emotional journeys that they're on. Everyone is special. And I'm going to tell you something. That's why it hurts so bad when there's a little box at the front of the auditorium, because everyone is special. And we look at them and we appreciate them and we care about them and we pray for them and we love them. Accept them and respect them. They need all the things that we talked about, but they're special regardless. Number four, talk to them and tell stories to them. We go back to Psalm 78. And if you know the context of Psalm 78, it talks a lot about history. But this history, talking to our children, is so important. I'm just going to read eight verses out of Psalm 78. You may turn there if you want to. Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, showing them to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done. For he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children. That they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. Do you see how much talking and how much passing on of family history and church history, if you please. How much of that is happening in those couple of verses? Does the rising generation know? In this setting, possibly we could talk about what happened when the Lancaster Conference was going in a worldward direction, and some of your ancestors not so far back decided to do something different. Do our children hear us talk about that, the where's and the why's and wherefores of that? Just using that for an illustration, it is a way that we, by word of mouth, can tell them and teach them, and they have to know it. At some age, it makes good sense. But then, you know, there's a lot of interesting things that happen in the last 50 or so years, in some of our lifetimes already, and we start telling those stories, what happened back there, and what Grandpa did, and what we hear from the generation before. In this type of a setting, that type of thing should be rather common. Talk to them, let them know about it, and pass it on. But pass on the faith as well, and that's what the problem was here in 78. Some people were in Psalm 78, some of them were not doing that. And they had a lot of backwards travel because of that. But there's generations being talked about there. And passing on the good news. Tell them, read stories to them. Whether it's what you're, get a little storybook and just read to the children. Something even that happened since we're married is now and then my father would find an interesting story. And remember one time specifically, he had an interesting story he wanted us to hear. And he read it to us. Even grandpas can do that much. Just read a story that you found that was fascinating, that's thrilled your heart. My mom passes on a story. She said, I want the grandchildren to read this story. And here, have it. And maybe they live in another country, you know. And sometimes they come around and said, this story right here, it's worthwhile. Just tell it to them. Read it to them. Little ones this age, like on the front bench here, and the 2 and 3 year olds love it. They might not understand all the words, but they that L-O-V-E-T-I-M-E, when you're telling a story, reading to them, it makes a bond. School teachers, read them stories. Older siblings, read them stories. Tell them stories. Tell them what happened today at work. Oh my, they get all excited. Tell them missionary stories. It's little things, but eventually they become the big things, right? Number 5. Going to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7. I want to again give a little encouragement to school teachers. Sometimes you have a child in your classroom whose home is not a happy home. And sometimes a good school teacher has been a stabilizing effect in the life of a child from a tempestuous home. Maybe some of you know what I'm talking about on that one. Be that person who will listen to them, and that's the point number 5, listen to them. Jesus teaching us here, he says, or what man is there of you whom, if his son ask bread, will give him a stone? Or if he ask a fish, will give him a serpent? If ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father which is in heaven give good things to them that ask him? Now, you know as well as I do that any child would sooner eat cookies than carrot sticks, at least most of the time. And they would sooner have candy corn rather than vegetable corn, okay? They would sooner, but, and you don't have to give them always what they want, but you should at least listen to what they think about. Listen to them. We learn a lot by listening. What hurts? Which shoe is getting too small? Some tool or some item that they would like to get sometime. And you keep that in mind. Sometime you hear it and, I'd just really like to have this little thing to add to my toolbox. I would just like to have this to put in my bedroom. And maybe it's something they could use. And you think about that the next time you think of a birthday for that child. Hey, you know what? I remember that they said this. Something that you can do for them. Listen. Listen. General conversation. What's the discussion around the table in the evening? Check in with the ones coming home from work. What happened today? How was school? How was things? How was recess? What did you play at recess? And then listen. Ask a question and then listen. Keep them ears open because you learn a lot. And you know what? The day will come when you're sitting maybe in the office And somebody would come by, "Hey, Dad, you got a minute? Hey, Mom, I have a question for you. Listen, listen, something's coming. Listen." I said, maybe they say, "I want to go along with you, Dad." "Where are you going?" "I want to go along." You know, the reason they want to go along might not be to see the whatever it is at the hardware store, or at Walmart. They've been there many times, but they want to say something. And if you get along with Mom and Dad, maybe it's a moment to talk. Do your children ever do that? Listen. It's a little thing, but at the end of the day, it's huge. It's huge. And most of us know what it's like when we wished we could have said something and just for some reason. Keep it in, keep it in, keep it in, keep it in, keep it in. And after a while, you will share with somebody that will listen. You will, eventually. You will. Everybody has a story to tell. And sometimes that listening takes us to places where they talk about things that aren't going so good in here when we listen. Sometimes it's something, you know, I really messed up today on the job. I feel like a failure. I mean, I tried to do this and this broke and that tool didn't work. I just, oh my. And it, but whenever they said it, then sometimes it's just a little bit better because they shared it with somebody. Have you ever been there, done that with Mom and Dad? Just saying it helps so much. Pray for them. A little thing, but it's a huge thing. The example of Job. Prayer is the fruit of love for anyone, but prayer is the fruit of love, especially for your children. There is no one more worthy of pity than he for whom no one is praying. May that person never be one of our children. Oh, pray for them. Pray for them by name. Pray for them by name in family worship when they're listening to you. Go down the list of the children. And if there's a specific challenge, they're sick in bed right now, but they aren't in the family worship circle, or go to their bedroom and sit there and have a little song with them, pray for them there. Do something so they know that you're praying for them. Sometimes whenever you have a quiet moment with that restless little one, and you wish he would be still or she would learn to sit still in church, you take them out, and maybe this time instead of doing some things, just put your hand on their shoulder and their head and just pray for them. Oh God, just be with this little dear little fella. He's having some struggles today, but just help me to take care of him right. I'm telling you, my friends, some of them are extremely touching moments. Lord, help me to teach my child to live so that he may know how to die, whether that's young or old. Pray for them, pray for them, pray for them. I met a man who had not only in his home children, but also grandchildren. And things were not going well in his home. They were not going well. And I asked him, "Sir," I said, "do you have any time? Do you ever take time to pray for your children?" He said, "I want you to know I got to get up bed, out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning and I don't got any time to pray for my children." Well, the results were obvious, and God forbid that that should be said among the people of God. We need to pray for our children. We need to pray with our children. What a blessing it is when one day there's that knock on the bedroom door or on the office door and one of them comes in and says, "You know what? I'm struggling with something. I think Jesus is talking to me." And you can get down on your knees and pray with them. Oh, what a blessing. Oh, what a blessing that is. It's heartwarming. It's thrilling. Because they want to talk. They need somebody to listen to them, listen to the story, and then pray with them. Oh, may God help us with that. It's a little thing, and yet it's so huge. Apostle Paul said, "Now I pray to God that ye do no evil." We can pray that for ourselves, lead us not into temptation, but keep our own children from temptation at school today, not cheating and being unkind and whatever. And as they go to the workplace and as they venture into life, keep them from evil. And I pray, God, that ye do no evil, but that ye should do that which is honest. God forbid that I should sin in ceasing to pray for you. And we should have that on our hearts as we think about our families and our dear loved ones. God forbid that I should sin in ceasing to pray. And that continues right up into grandparent age and beyond. It just goes and goes. That requirement, praying for one another and praying for our dear children, it just doesn't go away with birthdays. It's something that should stay within our hearts, very close to our hearts. Prayer for the little ones, prayer for the youth, prayer for the young marrieds, prayer for the older parents, prayer for them. Apostle Paul said, we give thanks to God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, praying always for you. And we can't pray for everybody all the time, but we can at least pray for our families most of the time. For sure. You never know what some of them are facing right now, today. Sometimes we just have no idea. And then we find out we were especially praying for them at this time, and look what they were facing over there. Last but not least, a little thing we can do for our children. Encourage them. Encourage them. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. And what is the antidote for that? Is to encourage them. You know what? We need to correct them sometimes. We need to discipline them sometimes. But we need to encourage them sometimes. We need to compliment them sometimes. Did you ever take a little junior on your lap and whisper in his ear real quiet so no one else but he can hear or she can hear? We're glad God sent you to live at our house. You're such a special child in our home. And that's just heartwarming. It's good, does us as parents good, and it does. And when they've had a tough day at work, just remember, Dad still cares about you. Mom still loves you. It was a tough day, and maybe you feel like you failed, but Dad and Mom still love you. We still care. Uncle still cares about you. And maybe it happens in siblings. Son just got married, it's 3rd of September. And he told a story what happened the 31st of January when I had a little crunch. And he said, big brother decided he's going to come up and help me out. And he started to cry as he stood there at open mic. He said, I love my brother because he really took care of me. Now, it's just a little illustration from our house. And you can let it in a trash can. But I'm going to tell you something. An older sibling pays attention and tries to encourage in a time of need. It means so much. It means a lot. It means so much. Encourage them. Compliment them. When you see them little fellas and they're out there helping in the garden, help picking up them potatoes, and they're working and industrious, and the work is moving along, and they go home that evening, go into the house and eat supper, and then they go to bed at night, and you're tucking them in, say, just put your hand on their back and say, I see a little man growing up. I see a little fella growing up, and he'll go to sleep as peaceful and happy as he can. Tell a young lady, I appreciate what I'm seeing in your schoolwork. You're doing better. The little lessons we've been, it's going better. We're happy. It makes mom and dad happy when we see this in your life. And school teachers, when you see it, it's coming around. And when they're bad, you got to love them. And when they're good, you got to love them. And they got to know that it feels good. It's the compliment, the encouragement. Every one of us, regardless of our age or our name, needs encouragement. And our children are no exception. We're focusing this morning on children. Our youth need encouragement. They could have chosen this shirt. They could have chosen this dress material. They could have chosen this pair of shoes or this one. And they decided and they weighed the instruction of the father, the law of the mother, what they've heard and what they've been taught, and they decided this way. They don't always decide right. Maybe. But when they decide right and something that mom and dad can appreciate, they should know it. We know you had a choice. We know. But you chose this. God bless you for that, son. God bless that decision, dear daughter, for what you've done. Encourage them. Some victory will help you. Each victory will help you some other to win. And then you know what? The next time, the choice might not be quite as crucial because they will remember that someone encouraged them in the good and the right way. I say again, someone has said that the secret to success is to do some little things over and over and over again. If the secret to successfully raise a godly family were to do some little things right, I trust that this list this morning would be a part of the little things. May God give us the wisdom and grace to take time day by day to do little things, to minister to our most valuable resource, which in fact is the heritage, or could we say inheritance, of the Lord. May God add his blessing. Those who care to, may kneel for prayer.